It's time for Good Health, an opportunity to hear from our local healthcare community about the most current medical topics and how they relate to your healthy lifestyle. Good Health is brought to you by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. Now let's welcome our host, Nick Bayerano.
The Good Health, sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. I am your host, Nick Bayerano. Joining us in the studio today is James Robbins, author, speaker, and motivational specialist. James is characterized as a management consultant, change specialist, adventurer, and motivational speaker. If you have any questions, please give us a call at 541-567-6500. Again, that is 541-567-6500. Welcome to the show, James.
Hey, Nick. Great to be here. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm glad you're here with us this morning. So, James,
yeah,
you were recently nominated as a top 100 leadership speaker for 2018 by Inc. magazine. So how does someone actually get nominated for that kind of a recognition?
Yeah, that's a great question that I don't know if I can answer. I don't know. It maybe means that there's only 101 of us out there. I'm not sure. It was a nice honor, but I'm not quite sure how all that came about.
Well, that's really cool. Before we get too far into what you're currently doing, can you take us back to the beginning? Who is James Robbins, and how did you get started in motivating and empowering others?
Yeah, well, out of college, I was planning to become a film director, and I took a different turn, and I ended up becoming a preacher for a lot of years, which was a lot of just very purposeful work for me. I enjoyed it. And it was during those years that I learned a lot about people and how to move people, what people are looking for in life. And also that's when I got kind of cut my teeth on stage. And then from there, I started getting asked more and more in the corporate world to come and talk to people about leadership and, you know, how to motivate people when, you know, not using pay as the kind of leverage, but how do you create a workplace that's more purposeful, that's more intrinsically motivated. And so I began doing that, and that just kind of morphed into a career over the years. And so, yeah, that's what I do now. I go into organizations, and I help managers, you know, do a better job at just getting more out of their staff and creating a more inspiring workplace.
So in 2012, you published a book titled 9 Minutes on Monday, which became a national bestseller. What was the writing process like for you, and what is the book about?
Okay, well, the book came out of a workshop that I had been teaching for a while, where the idea is that for a lot of us who lead people, it's not that we don't know necessarily what to do. Like, we know that we should recognize our staff, and we know that we should care about them. But the problem is we just get so busy that we end up not doing it. And so 9 Minutes on Monday is really just a framework to help you get back to the things that you know, that we know drive engagement and produce results. And so it's just, like I said, it's a simple framework that people enjoyed because in busy schedules, they felt like, hey, this is realistic and I can do this. The writing process was kind of a start and stop thing. It was one of those, hey, I'm going to write a book, and I'd start and I would do it for about a month, and then I would leave it and come back a couple months later and write and then leave it. And I'd love to say it was just this, I sat down and just banged it out, but it probably took me on and off a year to do that.
So did the book kind of propel you to become more of a renowned speaker, so to speak, or how did that actually come about to where you got to the point where you're starting to speak for organizations kind of all over the country and really all over the world in some extent, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was speaking before the book came out for quite a number of years, but there's something about, you know, there's still something about having a book out that it changes people's perception of you. I'm not even saying that it should change their perception, but it does change their perception. You somehow become a bigger deal just because you have a book out. But and at the same time, I mean, I get it. It's a lot to write a book, and then if it's impacting a lot of people, then, you know, they're grateful for that.
So you speak primarily on leadership and motivation. How have you seen leadership change over the years?
That's a great question. I think how I've seen it change is as we've educated ourselves more on what it means to be good bosses, and also, you know, what really does motivate staff. To me, we're seeing an increase in the skill of leaders who are out there. So the idea of a top-down leadership style, that's becoming, you know, archaic, when that used to be just the norm or the status quo. So I think now, and especially with the millennials coming up, they're expecting more. They're expecting more from their leaders. We're expecting our leaders to be more authentic, to be more humble. And in fact, if a leader has not been evolving, then they really risk losing influence, you know, month by month. Because I think generally the field of leaders is getting better than it was, let's say, 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
That's a good thing. You kind of mentioned there that expectations are kind of changing too from employees. Do you feel at all that employees are expecting too much from their leaders?
Well, there are certain cases where that is true. And part of this is, you know, if we back it up to just before the crash in 2008, there was just a crazy war for talent. And because of that, organizations were so focused on making sure their people were happy and engaged. And so we were throwing out all these engagement surveys all the time. And engagement surveys are great. They tell us, you know, where people are at. But there's a dark side to engagement surveys, is that, you know, it kind of raises the issues for employees that maybe they didn't even have before, in terms of how engaged or how happy they are. You know, 2008 happened, and then things changed a lot where people were just happy to have a job. But now we're back into that place where people are scrambling and fighting for talent. And so, again, companies are trying to do everything they can, and perks and all of that, to make their employees happy. So I do think in some ways, yeah, people have come to expect more. And then now we've got the media, so we hear stories of, you know, XYZ company that gives free lunch to all their employees, and another company, you know, gives people 6 weeks holiday a year. And because we hear these things now, we expect, well, why isn't my workplace doing that? When it's really not, it's not always realistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was kind of where I was going with that question. I'm glad you brought that up. So when you go into an organization, how do you know that this organization is ripe for accepting the principles that you teach, and for change, and for their leadership to reach the new level? How, I mean, is it easy to kind of gauge that, or does it come with time? I mean, what is your process like when you go into an organization?
So if I'm talking to the management, the leadership, I try to talk with some of the senior leaders first off, and then I also try and survey a lot of the managers and find out where some of their pain points are. And they're usually around similar places, so it's not like most people kind of follow a bell curve, if you will. Usually the same issues are the same issues. People are taxed with too much to do, not enough time to do it. And because of that, their managing of their people is what suffers. Because when we get really busy in an environment, we are pulled towards tasks versus managing people. Because managing people is a bit of a nebulous thing, and it's hard to know, you know, am I doing this correctly? And versus a task, I can just check something off my to-do list, and that relieves stress, and I feel like I'm making progress. And so sometimes when people have a choice of check something off my list or go manage somebody's performance, we're usually drawn to go check something off our list. So I will do some pre-work, you know, finding out a little bit about some of the needs. But most times as I go in and I begin talking about, you know, how busy everyone is, and everybody can relate with that. But then I walk them through a process and helping them understand that when you lead people, in fact, your success is actually hinging on how well motivated and engaged those people are. And if that's your main, in a sense, if that's your scoreboard, like if whether you succeed or not is based on how engaged this group is, then you want to make sure that's one of your primary focuses, to engage and motivate your staff. And that takes time and attention.
Yeah, I could see that taking years of work, really. I mean, getting to that point where you can kind of transition from what you were saying there, from being a task-oriented leader that you're just checking something off a list, to actually being able to engage those employees and motivate them to do something more and to get more out of them than what, you know, their task is just trying to do. So, you know, and kind of just talking about the leader, what are some character traits of the best leaders that you've discovered throughout your journeys?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So a couple of quick things off the top of my head. So number one, great leaders are what I call centered or anchored in that they have a clear idea of who they are and what they stand for. And that's really where it begins, because I think back to when I was young as a leader, I didn't know who I was and I didn't know what I stood for. And so the danger in that is you try to fake it and act like you know everything and that you have everything together, and you never want to tell your people that you don't know what they're doing. And of course, that actually creates more of a top-down leadership style. So great leaders, they're centered. They know what they value. They know their strengths. They know their weaknesses. They're okay even by them, and they're okay to get some help from other people. Secondly, they're visionary. Great leaders are not content with the status quo. They're always looking at the future, always thinking, you know, can we do this better? Can we do this more effectively? Is there something bigger that we can do? And that inspires people. When a leader can even come into maybe a situation that's fairly static and then just say, let's do something, guys. Sometimes the leader doesn't even need to have the clear vision other than just, hey, like, let's just do something and let's throw our heads together. Like, what can we do that's going to excite us? And get the group brainstorming around that, and pretty soon a vision comes out of that. Well, that's a visionary leader. And then I would add to that, I'll just say this. Great leaders are exemplary. And like it or not, but there is a certain morality that's expected of leaders. Mm-hmm. And this isn't a religious point. This is just a point about we have higher expectations from those who lead us. And part of the reason is because we as a society, we've equated good moral character with trustworthiness. And at the end of the day, trust is what it's all about when it comes to leaders and followers. If people don't trust you, they're not going to be completely open to your influence. They're not going to give you their best ideas. And because of that, it's going to hinder what you're trying to do.
Well, I mean, you really unpackaged a lot there. So if you're working with a leader and you notice that they've kind of been in a rut and they've kind of are just getting by and meeting their status quo, and they initially when they started, a leader might have some of these same things. You know, they might be visionaries. They might, you know, be trying to achieve more. And, you know, obviously life happens sometime in between there. How do you encourage those individuals to refine their balance and their center and their motivation to be a visionary leader?
Yeah, that's always a challenge. And that happens to all of us. You know, we all lose our way from time to time. I can think back to times in my career where, you know, I just got tired, you know, just fatigued. And it's in those moments where leaders have often lost sight of, they've lost sight of a couple things. They've lost sight of, you know, their potential in terms of what they can do. And also, they've lost touch with something bigger that they were connected to before. What drives a lot of great leaders is a certain level of passion. And that passion does come from a vision that's bigger than themselves. So sometimes we can be pursuing a vision and we fall short, or maybe we reach it, but it wasn't quite as satisfying as we thought, or something in an organization happens that discourages us. Maybe there was a level of bureaucracy, or maybe somebody did something that really ruined the trust of that leader, and they get disenchanted. I guess that's what happens. They get disenchanted, disenfranchised. And for leaders like that, I try to help them reconnect with, listen, it's not so much about what happens around you. It's making a decision of who you're going to be as a person, what kind of leader you're going to be. And to get back to mastering your craft, and I talk a lot about that, this concept of mastery, that regardless of what situation you're in, how can you make an impact? How can you improve? And pick yourself back up and give your heart to it again. If you just can't in that situation, then maybe it's time for a change.
Interesting. So you're listening to Good Health on KOHU, and I'm talking with James Robbins. We have been sharing some fascinating things about his experience with leadership and how he motivates others. If you have any questions for James, please give us a call at 541-567-6500. James, something that I know that you do while you're out visiting organization is you really equip leaders with essentially tools to help, you know, kind of reinvigorate them, help them find their passion. What are some of those tools? I know we briefly talked about that just a second ago, but just for people that maybe are tuning in, what are some of those things? What are ways that you go in and essentially re-motivate people and help them achieve greater things?
Yeah, so one big thing that I help leaders do is maybe shift their identity a bit. A lot of times we get stuck into this mode of, you know, I'm a manager and that's a job role, it's a job function. And yeah, there are certain job functions that go with managing and supervising. But a leader to me is more of a role that you play. And it's a role that's bigger than just the job. We know that leaders have great influence on the people that they lead. In fact, Saratoga Institute found out that 50% of an employee's happiness is linked to their relationship with their boss. And I always say to people, I don't know about you, I don't want that responsibility. Like, who wants that? Who wants half of their staff happiness to be linked to them? But just because we don't want it doesn't mean that we don't have it. You know, Gallup found that one of the main reasons why people quit is just, again, their relationship with their supervisor. We know that leaders carry a significant influence in people's lives. And so leaders' moods count for more. You know, if a leader comes in and has a bad day, it casts a longer shadow. A leader's criticism is more cutting. Even if it's delivered, you know, respectfully and kindly, it still weighs more. And at the same time, a leader's praise is more uplifting. So one of the things I help leaders do is really take on that identity of, it's not just a job title. It's not even just a function of what you do 9 to 5, but it's a role that you step into, where leaders are always trying to set an example. They're always trying to think about what's ahead. They're always looking for the best in their people. So that would be one thing. The second would be back to what we talked about with mastery, and this idea of, you know, what's next for you? When you think about your leadership, what do you need to do better? And one of my favorite quotes is by Michelangelo, and he said, you know, he was speaking about his own talent, his mastery, and he said, if people knew how hard I work to gain my mastery, they wouldn't be, or how does it say, they wouldn't be impressed at all. And I love that because, you know, he's basically saying that all these people come by and say, well, you're so amazing, you're such an amazing painter, look at the Sistine Chapel. And you know, his pushback to that is, you know how hard I work to perform this? Like, this isn't just come naturally.
Right.
And he said, if people knew how hard I work, I don't think they'd be impressed. And just that idea of really falling in love with your work. And for leaders, a big part of your work is in a sense, the art and science of moving people. It's helping shift their thinking. It's moving hearts. It's inspiring people. And I've been at this a long time, and I'm a long ways from reaching perfection, but it just continues to fascinate me. So even that alone, it's just to find something that you can continue to grow in and commit yourself to it.
So I want to ask you something else that kind of spurred my mind here a little bit. As far as employees are concerned, do employees need to be tolerant of their managers? I mean, obviously we know that, you know, basically what you just said is, and we know from statistically speaking that, you know, bad bosses, employees leave bad bosses and they seek other employment elsewhere. But how, you know, and they might have this great job and a great career and in a great employer environment, but if their boss is bad, they leave. Do employees need to be more tolerant, and do they need to pick up some of that slack and lead themselves? I mean, how do you factor that in when you go into organizations?
Yeah, so part of this comes with the kind of teams that you build. And one of the things I teach is that, listen, when it comes to your team, you know, a leader and their employees, everybody needs to be dependable. In fact, Google found out with their Project Aristotle, which was a big study they did to try and find out what makes a perfect team, they found out that dependability was one of the most important factors, this idea of, like, can I count on you? And in an environment with leading and people, it's kind of a two-way street where the leader has to know, hey, like, can I depend on you to do what you say that you're going to do? Like, I need to be able to hold you accountable. And then accountability also goes back the same way. It's like, well, I need to, you know, I'm accountable to you as a leader in terms of how I lead. So when you actually pull ego out of the way, you're able to have some great conversations about leading and working together. And honestly, one of the best traits of a leader is just an interpersonal humility. And when someone has a humility and they are able to admit that, yeah, I'm far from perfect, but hey, we got to get to work. That goes a long ways for an employee. So I do a lot of executive coaching, and there's a CEO that I'm coaching, and he's a fantastic, fantastic individual, very visionary. One of his dark sides is that he can get really frustrated and flustered, and it just this bad energy comes off him, and it really puts people, you know, everyone puts their heads down. But he knows that he does that, and he'll apologize and say he's trying to work on it. And because he's so likable, there's that humility that goes with him. People are able to see past that more. So I think employees get that, you know, leaders are trying to do their best, but when there's an added dose of humility in there, it makes all the difference. If an employee really is expecting too much, then that can be a great conversation between a manager and that staff member.
And I think that kind of goes into the realm of when you actually are putting together your team. Are you hiring somebody to do a task, you know, or are you hiring somebody to move your organization forward or help you achieve more things? How do you work with leaders and managers to get beyond, you know, just seeing an employee as somebody doing a task to somebody that can, you know, help them achieve greatness, I guess?
Yeah, so if a leader only sees their staff as a bunch of people that do tasks, in other words, just executors, then they're going to be really limited in terms of what they can accomplish, because those staff members won't feel compelled to put forth ideas or creativity or their suggestions or input. And at the same time, then the leader becomes a task master and not really a leader and visionary. So in a workplace, there's obviously a ton of stuff to do, and those tasks have to be managed. But that should only be in service to a larger vision that everyone's working towards. So the best leaders are able to pull their people in and let them, in a sense, let them taste what it means to be part of the leadership. And a word that I sometimes use is this idea of facilitation. Sometimes the best leaders are just facilitators, where they might have to make the final decision, but they've really pulled people in. In fact, Cornell University did a fascinating study where they looked at 320 small businesses, and half of them were more of, you know, kind of a old-style, top-down leadership, and the other half were more, you know, autonomy-supportive, bringing people into the discussion. Well, those autonomy-supportive companies grew four times faster. And that's significant, four times. I mean, that's a lot of dollars on the balance sheet.
Wow, yeah.
And, yeah, that's because, you know, a bunch of people realize, hey, I'm not the smartest guy in the room, but together, if we work together, we can make some cool stuff happen. So let's roll up our sleeves and get to work.
So you mentioned a good leader needs to cast a good vision. What would be an example of that? How do you make that tangible for somebody that might be listening?
Well, I was just in Georgia yesterday speaking with a company that they provide the internet and broadband and put data cable in the ground and all of that. And the CEO was getting up and he was talking about their 2030 plan. And which was their plan, you know, for the next 12 years or so. But the thing was, it had nothing to do with numbers or revenue or share price or anything like that. It had everything to do with the impact that they wanted to have on people. And they had that broken down into, you know, dozens of communities, hundreds of thousands of people. And any vision to be compelling has to be broken down into something that people can see. They've got to be able to see it, like an image. And that's usually, it has to be able to be told in a story with people, places, faces.
So how do you, you know, when a leader needs to share that or express that ideal, I know part of the motivation and the direction that you provide is what you call powerful presenting. How do you get a leader beyond just being able to get up and talk about, you know, stock prices and shares and the bottom line and their margin for the next quarter or year, to really casting that vision or essentially, you know, presenting that ideal of what we are really wanting to accomplish as far as touching people's lives?
Yeah, I created a course on storytelling for leaders because it's such an important tool. At the end of the day, leaders have to move people emotionally, whether they're casting a vision or even walking through a balance sheet to tell the board of directors, you know, what's on it. We're always doing things to try and move people, persuade people, and there's an emotional component there. And for leaders to be able to do that, their best vehicle is through story. And story is so fascinating because, and I know we've heard a lot about this in just in the media lately, but our brains are hardwired to process information through images, and especially through story. And so when a leader gets up, whether to the whole organization or just somebody with four people on their team, and they tell a story that takes a character or a hero through a journey, and in the end, there's some kind of change, and that point to the story becomes the point that you're wanting to make, that's the point that will stick for people. So I'll give you an example. A guy by the name of Adam Grant, who's a psychologist at Wharton, he went into a college, into a call center, and he wanted to do an experiment. So he got permission to divide the group into three. And, you know, the first group was just a control group. The second group, he gave them a bunch of material that just told them about all the benefits that they get from doing the job and, you know, the better phone skills they're getting and things like that. So, again, this is a call center. And then the third group, he gave them a bunch of letters written by past scholarship recipients, you know, people who'd received that scholarship in the past. And so imagine this for a moment. Here's people in this call center, and you got this one group, and they're reading through a bunch of stories of people who had their lives changed because they got the scholarship, which really they had their lives changed because these people were on their phones raising money for the scholarship. Well, Adam Grant comes back a month later, and he wants to see if there's any difference in the fundraising. And the control group, of course, stayed the same. This group in the middle, they didn't raise any more money. But the group that read about the people's stories, they doubled their pledges, and they doubled they had more than doubled the amount of money that they brought in 1 month.
Wow. So you're listening to Good Health on KOHU, and today I'm talking with James Robbins, one of the top 100 leadership speakers for 2018. James, it's been a privilege talking with you this morning. James Robbins is actually going to be here in Hermiston on March 8th, presenting at Hermiston High School at 7 p.m. for our community. And it's free and open to anyone that would like to attend. And if you would like to attend, you can RSVP by calling 541-667-3509. And James, if you're listening, I'd like to thank you for being on the show today.